let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Touch your mind. Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something, or, if it's the first Monday of the month, understand something. You know how we are so fortunate to have the Wonderfest crew send us science envoys to tell us things in ways that we can understand them. Today is no exception. We're going to talk about galaxies and the bigness of them and how they form over time. Here to talk about it is my science envoy du jour, Maharet Shifarau. Welcome.
Hi, glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. So before we get into the science portion of it, can you tell me when you first got interested in science itself?
It started from a pretty young age for me. I was a really big reader growing up, and I really loved fantasy books like Harry Potter, Chronicles of Narnia. I was all over those books. And my mom was a little bit worried that I was reading too much fiction, and she, she made a little request of me. She said, every time I go to the library and I take out a stack of fiction books, could one of them please be a nonfiction book?
Oh, okay, I get it. It wasn't that it wasn't the reading portion.
No,
it
she was happy I was reading, but okay. You know, she wanted me to learn, I guess, real things too.
Okay, and were you on board with that?
I was very resistant, but I listened to her. I went to the nonfiction section of my local library, and I remember scanning all the books there, and I would see things about, you know, geography, volcanoes, animals, like things that other people are interested in, but it didn't really speak to me. But I remember coming across a space book. And that really spoke to me.
Okay. Do you even remember what the title was, or was it just space?
Not at all. I don't remember what the title was at all. But I remember being fascinated. I was very picky too. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be just a book about like planets and stars, which are very exciting, but that also wasn't what spoke to me. I was really into what I now know is called cosmology, like cosmology books that were talking really about the big picture, like what is the ultimate fate of the universe. And that seemed really in line with all the fantasy books that I had spent so much time reading. So I was obsessed with those books, reading about like a closed universe and open universe. And that's kind of what started it for me.
And so when was that? Was that like about elementary school or junior high? When did you first discover those books?
Yeah, I think that was around elementary
school. Okay, okay.
And so I was always interested in understanding about the stuff in between the stars is how I had thought about it. But I didn't know that it was a real career by any means. So that took until about maybe high school that I realized that there is a career for people who study cosmology and space. That wasn't something that I knew at that young age in elementary school. That came later.
So because you had this sort of very focused interest, were the librarians able to help you find the stuff? You know, because that's what they're there to do. But you had a very specific kind of narrow trajectory for the nonfiction.
Yeah, I should have utilized the librarians. I was a menace at that age. I spent all my time there after school, and I think I was a little loud and rambunctious. I should have utilized them, but I was a free agent. I just would just go in every day. I would see what was there, pick something out. Yeah.
So then we'll fast forward to so now you're in college. Do you immediately go into studying cosmology and physics, or what happened there?
Yeah, so I would say I did go into college having declared astrophysics as my major. I was lucky enough to go somewhere where they had that program, but the way I had made that decision occurred in high school for me, because that's when you're, you know, applying to colleges.
Right.
And I started out high school because I didn't know that this is something you could study. I started out thinking I would do like political science or international affairs, just because I was like, that's something you can actually study. I'll do this. And then over the course of high school, I remember it was a specific movie I watched that made me rediscover my love for space. It was when Interstellar came out. And they hired a consultant, like a cosmologist, who actually studies this, and I realized,
and the light bulb went off.
Maybe I could do that. So that's when I made the decision, and I'd say about 11th grade when you're applying to colleges. And yeah, I went into college declaring it as my major and just kept with it.
Very cool. Very cool. So my understanding of any type of astrophysics and physics in general is like, first you have to get a degree in math. Is that still the case?
You don't need to get a whole degree in it. Like, you are most qualified to do astrophysics research if you get an astrophysics degree in college. But you do need to have a good understanding of math. So most astrophysics programs, they will have core math classes that you're required to take. So I did those in undergrad.
Okay. So then now we're going to fast forward to what you do today, which is you study galaxies.
Yeah, I study galaxies. I study galaxies in a way that I think most people are not used to thinking about them.
Do tell.
Yeah, so you could say I study how galaxies form, and then when I say that, you might picture an individual galaxy, like our Milky Way, and how that came to be over time. And that is a part of the picture, but what I study is more statistically how galaxies form. So I'll say more.
Okay.
So, like, remember, I was interested in all of these really big picture questions about, like, what is the ultimate fate of the universe? And that's something that people in cosmology are interested in, like the origin and fate of the cosmos, of the universe. And so when I say statistically, I mean, like, imagine our Milky Way galaxy, but then zoom out.
Okay.
And then as you go further and further out, there are other galaxies that you're looking at. And so now you have a population of galaxies. And so what I'm interested in understanding is, how did that population of galaxies come to be? So if you look out at the night sky, and you can do this at home, and you see all these stars, we build telescopes and are able to do that with galaxies and see all of the galaxies that are visible from Earth. And the goal is to be able to model what that looks like from right after the Big Bang.
Okay.
So statistically, how did those galaxies come to form where they formed? Like, the way they're spatially distributed.
Got it. Now, this is a question that I don't think I've ever asked, and it occurs to me I should have asked this like a million years ago. And by the way, you're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. So when did people realize that there was more than one galaxy? Like, how far back does that go?
Because
before they thought, you know, the Earth was the center of everything, and then they were like, okay, maybe it's the sun.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I don't know exactly when it happened, but my understanding of the situation is that people obviously saw that there were these like bright lights in the sky, mm-hmm. and they had different theories for what they are. And it took a bit to realize that those like stars are just like our sun. That took some time to understand. I want to say I'm not a science historian, no. So I I don't know exactly when that happened in human civilization.
I'm going to assume that it had something to do with telescopes, because before telescopes, you just assumed that the sun, like, this was it, like the sun and everything there.
Yeah, I want to say that it depends what you're thinking of for telescopes. Like back with Galileo, he had telescopes.
Or modern telescopes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to say it's somewhere in between Galileo and like the 1900s.
I like that. I won't torture you with that one anymore. So you're looking at, here's our galaxy from what I understand, we're kind of in the boonies in relation to, you know, I don't understand how they figure it out, but.
I want to say that our galaxy is a very typical galaxy.
Meaning
like its size, its mass, like there's nothing about it that really stands out compared to other galaxies, mm-hmm. other than we know there's life here. Just because I liked your comment about it being in the boonies, that's like true in a sense. So because it's a typical galaxy, it's like not necessarily isolated from other galaxies more than other galaxies are mm-hmm. isolated from other galaxies. Mm-hmm. But what's cool about our universe is a lot of it is really empty. So all of the matter that right after the Big Bang was kind of more uniformly distributed over time, clumped up and into what we know as galaxies today. So yeah, a galaxy is kind of in the boonies because there's a bunch of empty space in between it and the next galaxy.
Okay. Now, are all these galaxies, are they grouped around anything? Are they all on the same plane? Are they circle? I mean, like, how are the galaxies laid out?
Yeah.
Relative to each other.
They are. So okay, there's a lot I could answer with that.
Answer it with it all.
So the first question, I love that you asked that about if they're like forming around anything. That's mm-hmm. like exactly what I study. The reason that we have galaxies is that there is dark matter, mm-hmm. Which is a term that I think people have heard of, but I don't know if they necessarily like know what it is. But yeah, so dark matter, if you were to quantify like all of the energy in the universe and mm-hmm. attribute it to different sources, mm-hmm. only 5% of the stuff in the universe is stuff that you and I are used to like seeing and touching and interacting with.
Okay.
That's ordinary matter. Mm-hmm. Only 5%.
And the other 95%?
Yeah. So then the other 25% of it is dark matter. So this is a kind of matter, which means that it has, it interacts with gravity.
Okay.
So things orbit around, if you have a lot of dark matter, things will orbit around it.
Okay.
You can't see it. You can't touch it. And then the rest of it is dark energy, which is responsible for, so that's like 70%.
Okay.
Is responsible for the accelerated expansion of the universe. That's a whole other topic to unpack. But to bring it back to the dark matter, mm-hmm. That is the reason that we have galaxies. Because early on in the universe, all of the different kinds of matter, the dark matter, the ordinary matter, was uniformly distributed, like I had said earlier,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Except there were these tiny, tiny, microscopic, minuscule fluctuations in their density.
Sure.
So like little parts of it were a little more dense than other parts.
Okay. Like spreading sand, like some, I mean, it's all roughly the same, but some are
Yeah, but bit. Some are just a little bit bigger over here, a little bit less over there.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening is those tiny fluctuations grew over time. So anywhere you had a really an over-density, that ended up attracting more matter around it. And it pulled away from where you had the underdensities. And that's
okay.
how you ended up with these huge voids and these galaxies.
Okay.
And so the ordinary matter, because there's less of it, it gets attracted to that dark matter.
That makes total sense.
So the galaxies are forming around clumps of dark matter.
It's almost like a snowball effect, or, you know, like
yeah.
the avalanche, the ball rolling down and picking up more stuff.
I like to think of it as capitalism. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
I love it. Okay, so you have these some billions and billions of years, matter that's gaining more and more mass,
mm-hmm.
until what?
It reaches, it's called a critical threshold.
Okay.
So it reaches some level of density.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the mass, how much mass there is, that's important, right? It's how much mass there is in a certain volume. So once it gets dense enough,
mm-hmm.
then the dark matter collapses, which means that it becomes gravitationally bound. So it becomes what we call a dark matter halo. So just think of it as like a spherical mass of dark matter that remember, I mentioned the universe is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are gravitationally bound, they resist that expansion. They stay bound together.
Mm, okay.
And yeah, does that answer?
I think
question?
So. I
yeah.
think so. So the way I see it is like you have all of these things that are sort of gathering together. They're not masses yet, and then at some point they just all collapse in each other,
yeah.
and they just become one thing. Is that correct?
They become
one big
dark matter halo, a collection of dark matter particles that kind of like, you know, planets
okay.
forming.
Yeah.
Like enough of the stuff came together.
Now, do they call it dark matter because people don't know what it is, or because people can't see into it, or?
Yeah, I think that the reason it's called dark matter is supposed to explain the fact that we can't see what it is. It's a little bit of both. Like the way it was discovered was through its gravitational effects. So.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists figured out that there has to be some missing matter based off of observing how fast galaxies rotate as a function of the distance from the center of the galaxy.
Okay.
So you can like measure how fast it's rotating at the center, how fast it's rotating like somewhere in the middle, how fast it's rotating at the edge of the galaxy.
Uh-huh.
And you can predict that based off of how much mass there is in the galaxy. By observing how much light there is, and then you can infer how much mass there is based off of that. And they plotted that, they made that plot, and they said, this doesn't make sense given how much light we can see. It shouldn't be rotating that fast. So
okay.
there has to be some extra mass there.
Mm.
And then that was called dark matter.
Okay.
Didn't know what it was, couldn't see it. I think invisible maybe makes more sense, but dark matter stuff.
Right. Okay. So if you have this thing that has this massive, that both resists the gravitational pull to expand it, but it has the ability to draw things to it, is there a point where a piece of dark matter will get so big that it could just suck in a galaxy?
Right. So the way that the galaxies form
mm-hmm.
is they get pulled in to the gravitational influence of that dark matter halo that has now formed because
okay.
the galaxies are made of ordinary matter, like just regular like
mm-hmm.
gas.
Mm-hmm.
And that was initially very uniformly distributed.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the dark matter clumped up and became this bound object.
Okay.
The gas also was drawn to the center of the dark matter halo.
Okay.
And accumulated there. And then that's where you have, so galaxies are not pulled into dark matter halos because a galaxy forms within a dark matter halo.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you're saying that we are somewhere inside a dark matter
mm-hmm.
halo.
The Milky Way galaxy has its own dark matter halo.
Okay. But then I'm just trying to figure out. So are we inside of dark matter?
Yeah, there's dark matter
okay.
everywhere.
Okay.
And around a galaxy, there's more of it. And
okay.
Yeah, we're here because a dark matter halo formed at some point.
So all of the galaxies that we can see, are we all inside the same dark matter bubble?
That's a great question. This is part of what I study, is like modeling how those halos form.
Uh-huh.
So there are multiple dark matter halos, and they have at least, well, they have one galaxy at the center. They may have one galaxy at the center if it's large enough.
Mm-hmm.
If the dark matter halo is large enough, they will have a galaxy at the center.
Mm-hmm.
This is called the central galaxy. You can think of it as the main galaxy, the center of attention in that dark matter halo.
Okay.
And if the dark matter halo is large enough, it can also have other galaxies, smaller ones, that are bound to that larger
central
dark. Yes, the central dark matter halo.
Okay.
And the fun thing is, those smaller galaxies, they're part of that whole dark matter halo system.
Uh-huh.
And they also have their own little dark matter halos around
okay.
them called subhalos. And yeah, it's
kind of works yeah. like the way like atoms work in a way. It's like you've got the central thing, and then there's things circling
yeah, yeah,
at
yeah.
a certain point.
Yeah.
So in our halo, clearly we're not the belle of the ball. Does the galaxy, who's the star galaxy in our dark matter halo?
Oh, that's such a good question. I'm not sure I know the answer.
That's okay. See, this is why I like scientists, because you're
yeah.
willing to say, I don't know, instead of just make something up. So. All right. So when you're studying all of this stuff, like, what's a typical day for you in terms of studying these clusters? Because it's so vast. I mean, it's almost like, you know how, what is it, quantum physics is just crazy. It feels like it's the
oh, yeah.
other end of quantum physics, where it's so vast you can't even grasp it all.
Yeah. This answer, so for me personally, I do computational work, so
mm-hmm.
it's not very glamorous. I'm behind a laptop all day.
Okay.
But I think it's really cool because I basically have access to the universe in my laptop. Currently I'm working with real data, but in the past I've worked with simulated data, and simulated data is really cool because people have built a mock universe. And I have access to that mock universe on
mm-hmm.
my laptop.
so what is it that you're doing then? So you have a mock
yeah.
universe. Someone goes, do your thing. And you, what?
Yeah. So I am on the more statistics side of it. So I have access to... So the information I care about is where, how many galaxies there are and where they are in space.
Okay.
So for every galaxy, I have like its position.
Mm-hmm.
If it's real data, maybe I'll have access to like its luminosity or
okay.
its mass.
Okay.
And what I do from there is I measure, I quantify how clustered the galaxies are. So I'll say more about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I'm interested in, right, is characterizing statistically how the galaxies form, so how they're distributed in space. So the key, I realized I didn't mention this, the key thing is that galaxies are not like randomly spread out in space. They mm-hmm. have a specific pattern to them.
So really?
So we call that clustered. So in some parts of space, there's more galaxies. Mm-hmm. And in other parts of space, there's less galaxies. And that pattern is called a cosmic web. Because if you look at observations, and we also see this in our simulations, it's like a web-like structure that
really?
Emerges in the universe.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's nuts. Because you would think that things would just sort of be willy-nilly, but no, you're saying there's a rhyme and a reason to it.
Yeah. And I am interested in modeling that, and then the day-to-day would be taking that data that tells me where they are mm-hmm. and measuring how clustered the galaxies are.
So like when you say like some places are clustered more together, those would be like where the web intersects?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. You can like, they break it down into like filaments and nodes. Like nodes are where the filaments intersect.
Uh-huh.
It's really cool.
That's nuts to me. So with all of these galaxies, do any of them do any of them move like an inch? Like do they move? Because mm-hmm. I've heard that the universe is expanding. So is it measurable, any movement yet?
Yeah, they do. They do move. So they move for multiple reasons. One, they move because space is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see them. You'll see. So the whole way that we're able to detect galaxies is we measure how fast they are receding away from us due to the expansion of the universe. So we are able to detect their velocities.
Okay.
And that becomes a measure of how far away the galaxy is based off of how fast it's moving mm-hmm. away from us.
Okay.
But
we're also moving.
We are
we?
Moving. So all of these are relative
okay.
measurements relative to us.
Okay.
And they also have what's called a peculiar velocity that is separate from the velocity that is due to just the universe expanding. And that's more due to like local effects of other galaxies being nearby and uh-huh. maybe like a merger is about to happen or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
When you say mergers, are you talking about two galaxies that are
about to merge? That's also key to how galaxies form. It's called hierarchical structure formation. So it just mm-hmm. means that you get all your big galaxies from little galaxies that merged together in the past.
Okay. Yeah. So is our galaxy a galaxy that just was a galaxy, or was it at one point several galaxies that merged? Or do we even know?
This is not what I study, but I'm pretty sure that we are the product of mergers, and we are on the course to be merged with our nearest galaxy in the future. I think it's Andromeda Galaxy.
Wow.
Yeah, but like way, way beyond any of us
sure,
will
sure.
ever be here.
Sure. So with the galaxies, have we been able to measure how much our galaxy has moved from wherever it was when people first realized that we were on the move?
I don't know if someone has studied that question exactly mm-hmm. the way you've phrased it, but I think maybe just because that seems like a really hard question to answer because we are here.
Sure.
And so it's like, how do you pick what your frame of reference is? Someone would have had to have thought of this like way in the past and tracked that measurement over time to be able, like, across generations, I think, is when you would be able to see that change. But I think the reverse way to think about it is you can compare the constellations we see today to the constellations people reported, like, way back in the beginning of human history. And then those have changed. And I think that's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, then what is something that you learned in your research that blew your mind, or that made you go, wow, this is amazing? Some like thing that you're just like, I'm so glad I'm studying this.
Let me think.
Go ahead.
This is not something that I specifically study, but it's something that people in my community are really excited about. And being in the field when people have started learning about evolving dark energy is really cool. I don't know if you have heard about this. But like, dark energy is responsible for the accelerated expansion of the universe. So the universe is getting bigger, but it's getting bigger even faster. And we have had an understanding of that expansion rate called like the standard cosmological model for 90s or something.
Okay.
And there have been measurements recently that are kind of breaking that model potentially, and saying that the reason that the universe is expanding due to dark energy is that dark energy is really funny and has other types of energy, like dark matter, ordinary matter. As the universe expands, their density decreases. That makes sense,
right?
The same amount of matter, and then as the volume gets bigger, it decreases. Uh-huh. Dark energy is really funny because it seems to have a constant energy density.
Okay.
So the density stays the same even though the universe is getting bigger.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that was the standard model, which is already a funny thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And the measurements that came out recently are saying, oh, maybe the energy density is decreasing. Of dark energy.
Oh.
And that would potentially slow the expansion of the universe. And I just think that that's really cool to be in a time where people are questioning like fundamental parts of our model. Because that's the stuff I was so excited about as a kid.
It's just the models and all of the questions around it.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you ever run across children who are fascinated by what you do?
I've given talks and people ask that question, like how I came into it. And I remember a talk I gave recently, I told the story about the books I was reading, and a girl came up to me after and said she really loved Harry Potter too. And I was like, I hope that this has some, maybe inspired you to, you can also study the stars.
So when you're explaining to kids what it is you do, how do you explain it to, say, like someone who's like 9 years old?
I think I would say that I'm studying how the universe came to be. How the galaxies that we see in the sky came to be.
Where are you currently doing your research?
I'm at Stanford.
Oh, okay.
Right now, yeah.
All right. Yeah. And is there like a single lab that everybody works out of? Is it just like the astronomy department or?
Yeah, I'm in. So Stanford doesn't have its own dedicated astronomy department. I'm in a physics department.
Okay.
But we have an astronomy institute within that. And I work, I'm in the group of one of the faculty members there. Mm-hmm. But there's multiple groups. We're all interested in cosmology. I think our institute name is CIPAC, so I hope I'm not messing this up, but Kavli Institute for Particle Astrophysics and Cosmology. So everyone's interested in these big questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if there was someone who, like a lay person who just wanted to get more of an understanding of what it is you do, where would you recommend the starting point be?
I'm gonna say, I think those pop science books are pretty good. There's a faculty member at Stanford, Leonard Susskind, who I don't remember the names of any of these books off the top of my head, but I can name the people who wrote them. But okay. Like Leonard Susskind, I know wrote a pop science book for the layperson, and I know Neil deGrasse Tyson has some, and Shonda Prescott Weinstein also has one. I mean, I got into it by reading, so I would just encourage reading. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, with that, Maharet, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And I've been like admiring your ear and like everything, because I love cosmology things, as I told you before. So it makes me super happy to see your earrings. All right, people of Earth. And I mean this sincerely, people of Earth, you've just heard all about cosmology and the fact that, you know, there's all, like, we're out in the boonies, but we're here and we're having a good time. You know what? Maharet didn't make use of the librarians, but we're going to make use of the librarians today because they're in the house. So we're going to have them on in just a bit because it's the first of the month. And that means that they want to tell us what all is going on. So stay tuned.
Take a seat, enjoy the ride. Past the clouds, yeah, we're past the sky. Trip to outer space, a trip to outer space. We got 8 planets, let's start with the first one. Mercury is the closest one to the sun. About this planet, we should learn more. Its interior is dominated by a large iron core. Now there's something that it can't conceal. Mercury has a small magnetic field, and I'm sure that there's more to this. But let's head to Venus. Number 2 on our list, and I bet you didn't know, but it's true. It's the brightest in the sky except for the sun and the moon. Now the Earth is planet number 3. The trees provide the oxygen that we need to breathe. Now here's some knowledge that I have to offer. 71% of Earth is made of water. Now this trip doesn't end, we're going past the stars. So what's planet number 4? Mars. So now that you know that, here's more that you should know. It was formed about 4 billion years ago, and the rust in the soil makes it a red planet. Before we see the rest, here's a message from your captain. Take a seat, enjoy the ride. Past the clouds, yeah, we're past the sky. Trip to outer space, a trip to outer space. Take a seat, enjoy the ride. Past the clouds, yeah, we're past the sky. Trip to outer space, to outer space.
Let's zoom past 4, and Jupiter was what's in store, the giant of the solar system, and it's more than 300 times the mass of Earth. Then Saturn comes next in the verse. Did you know it had 18 moons, at least 18 moons, and last to be seen with a telescope zoom? But 7th from the sun, it's Uranus, another gas giant with 27 moons that keep flying. And Neptune, finally last of the gas, giant several times larger than the Earth's mass. Can you imagine a quarter of your life left in pure darkness, living in the night? Well, that's how Neptune runs, and all 8 planets revolve around the sun. So it's Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. And Pluto is no longer a planet. There were 2 resolutions passed to revoke its status as a dwarf. It will always be in the mix, but it got voted out in August of 06.
Take a seat, enjoy the ride. Past the clouds, yeah, we're past the sky. Trip to outer space, a trip to outer space. Take a seat, enjoy the ride. Past the clouds, yeah, we're past the sky. Trip to outer space, a trip to outer space.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune.
Can find. wanna blow your mind. In 1543, Nicholas Copernicus said this while he laid on his deathbed. He said the planets revolve around the sun. He left the Copernican system. Isaac Newton in 1664 discovered gravitational law. Gravity in all its splendor is the force that draws objects toward each other. Somebody with an electric personality is Michael Faraday, Mr. Electricity. His experiments in 1821 led to the first generator. I think we should take a little look through time. We'll see what we can find. I bet it's gonna blow your mind. How about we take time, see what we can find. Gonna blow your mind. Charles Darwin in 1859 said organisms evolve slowly over time, and all of these changes allow them to survive. Louis Pasteur in the 1860s.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That's from Brain Beats, because people are brainy. It's the first Monday of the month, which means because the first falls on a Monday, we can have the librarians at the beginning of the month. So this is going to be like a blue moon of librarians, because we'll have them today and we'll have them at the end of the month. I'd like to welcome my librarianistas du jour, Jess Ouyang, Lori Tellerico, and Jen Wu. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So what's going on at the library? Who wants to start?
I can start.
Okay, Jess.
I'm Jess. So it is June 1st, which is the first day of Summer Stride, mm-hmm. which is our summer learning program. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk a little bit about summer learning. My colleagues will talk about some highlight library programs as well.
Okay.
So a bit about Summer Stride. It's for all ages, and everyone is invited to participate. Mm-hmm. And you can participate by learning at the library. So we invite you to come learn with the library the whole summer, and any learning you do with the library counts toward participation. You can participate in three main ways. You can read, obviously. Mm-hmm. All reading counts. Mm-hmm. And the library has all types of materials. We have manga, we have cookbooks, we have romance, we have thrillers, we have biographies. If you want it, we've got it. So if there are any materials you're looking for, if you want help finding the perfect item for you, come into any library location and ask any of our staff.
Do audiobooks count?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can read a print book. You can listen to an audiobook. I prefer audiobooks personally, so definitely.
Okay.
Another way to participate is you can use library resources. We have digital resources about language learning, career skill development, test prep, homework help, and more. Mm-hmm. And then you can also attend library programs. So I'll leave the highlights to my colleagues. Mm-hmm. But once you're participating, you can track your learning using a paper tracker, which is available in two versions. We have a game board activity tracker, which is very cute.
Uh-huh. Oh, it is cute. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's full of little bubbles you can fill in as you're participating.
I'm going to keep this.
And then we also have an adult summer challenge card, which is also bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, it's very cute.
I love it.
And you can pick up a paper tracker at any SFPL location.
You
can also track your progress digitally on Beanstack. So you can go to sfpl.beanstack.org, or you can use the Beanstack app.
What's Beanstack?
Beanstack, yeah. It's a way to track your progress virtually. You can fill in little check boxes as you track your learning over the summer.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And then once you learn for 20 hours, you can come into any location and pick up your prize. This year, our 20-hour prize is our beloved tote bag. We have original art by our illustrator this year, Needy Chinani.
Mm-hmm.
A bit about Needy, she's an award-winning author and illustrator. She's known for books like Super Boba Cafe, Shark Princess, What Will My Story Be, and Binny's Diwali. Her tote bag design features a cable car and a host of cute creatures riding in the cable car.
Oh, very cute.
The design is only available this summer, and you don't want to miss it.
Awesome.
The tote bag prize is available for pickup starting Saturday, June 13th.
Nice.
Special to this summer, in addition to our 20-hour challenge, we have a special super reader challenge we're launching.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage you to continue learning once you've finished your initial 20 hours. So you can pick up an additional tracker, or you can continue logging your learning on Beanstack. And our top secret prize for participants who learn for 40 hours will be announced on July 6th during National Summer Learning Week.
I don't, my listeners can't see this, but she's like Mary Poppins over here. Every time you mention something, a magical, fabulous thing pops out and she hands it to me. So I'm just loving this day right now.
We have plenty of swag at all of our library locations.
Uh-huh.
So we have bookmarks as you're holding. We have our paper truckers. We have stickers. We have pencils. So come and visit us and pick up something to take home.
All right.
Also, all of this information is on our Summer Stride landing page, which is sfpl.org/summerstride. There are some highlighted upcoming events, and we have recommended reading lists for ages pre-K through 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all designed in collaboration with SFUSD librarians and our SFPL librarians.
I just got a pencil. I'm like a kid. I'm so excited whenever I get like something that's brightly colored or got sparkles or anything.
The pencil is very cute this year. I have some programs to highlight for teens, but I'll pass it to my colleagues to talk about other age groups.
All right. Well, let's start with Lori Tellerico. First of all, what part of the library do you work in?
So I work in community programs and partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the Adult Services Community Engagement Coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to talk to you guys about some amazing adult programs that we have going on and some all ages programs as well.
Excellent.
One thing I'm really excited about is our local author series.
Mm-hmm.
We worked really hard to bring in some local Bay Area writers to many of our library locations throughout the city. We have topics in all areas. We have books about gardening by Judith Taylor and Varla Ventura. We have some memoirs. We have some science fiction writers. Julia V is going to be coming. And we have some great books on food and wellness. So it's a great opportunity to discover new authors or meet a local author and dive deeper into a new or even favorite topic. So it's an opportunity. People can come to their local branch, meet a local author, hear about that author's work, and engage in conversation with that author.
Okay. And when is, and like, over what period of time?
Throughout the summer, from June all the way through August. We have different authors at different locations.
And do you need to sign up in advance, or can you just show up?
It really depends on the location.
Okay.
So if I would recommend checking our website, sfpl.org, and seeing what we've got going on for local authors and checking the entries for the locations you're interested in, and they will have information if they need registration.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's give Ms. Wu a chance to weigh in. What's happening with you?
Thank you. Let's see. On the youth side, well, just said it, like, we have something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So we handle our programs thematically. So we have outdoor nature and STEM programs, music performers, specifically from Bay Beat, which is SFPL's online streaming service of local bands.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, like Lori was mentioning, authors and illustrators. There's food and wellness programs, entertainment and library-led programs. So librarians will host a program for youth, their families, and adults in all ages. For youth specifically, there are current and past Summer Stride illustrators. So if you're loving Needy Chinani's illustrations, know that she's going to be doing some public programs throughout the city. But know that we also invited back Ken Pack, who was last year's Summer Stride artist, and then Minnie Fan and Sandy Santa Maria. So they'll be doing a workshop around creating art together as a community, but also with that literacy connection, because we're the library and we have books, and they do too. So we're going to highlight those books. I'm really excited about it, and hopefully families will be able to sign up. It is reservation only, or reservations required, because there might be some free art kits at each of those events. Just dropping that as a seed for everybody.
All right.
I'm also excited about Mission Science Workshop. It's a local organization. They focus on science and STEM for youth. Usually during the school year, they're so busy serving Title I schools, but for the summer, at least for June, they are with us at our local branches, hosting science activities, tinkering activities, and they're going to be introducing their new tinkering truck. So it's a mobile truck that has all their exhibits and then live animals inside. So I think kids will get a kick out of that for sure.
That's amazing. Now, for any of you, I want each of you to tell me about a program that is happening at the library that you just want to make sure people know about it. So who wants to start?
Yeah, I can start. I have a couple, actually. These are all programs for tweens and teens.
Mm-hmm.
So the first I want to highlight is our Summer Youth Volunteering Program. Okay. We're right at the beginning of summer, and so our volunteering program has begun.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our locations are still accepting volunteers. So if you are entering grades 8 through 12 this fall and you're interested in volunteering at the library,
mm-hmm.
I want you to call your local library to see if they're still accepting volunteers. And then you can go to on.sfpl.org/syv for summer youth volunteers to apply. You get to learn more about the library and help with our summer learning challenge. And you get to help with any special programs happening at the branch that you are volunteering at. The other program I want to highlight is YEL, which is Youth Engaged in Library Leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It's our summer internship intensive. It's a paid workforce development program designed for rising 11th and 12th graders and graduating seniors. And our interns every year work collaboratively to create unique projects.
Mm-hmm.
And we call their final projects YEL Presents. These are library programs available to the public.
Okay.
All of their final projects will be hosted at the end of July, and they'll all be highlighted in our At the Library newsletter, which is a paper newsletter you can pick up any library.
Okay.
So I invite you to come and support your local teen interns and check out what they've designed for you. Previous years have included making your own ice cream or attending a mini haunted house. There's been tie-dyeing workshops and themed craft-a-thons, so there's plenty to check out. Last, I want to highlight Youth Poet Laureate. So we are in our second year mm-hmm. of San Francisco's Youth Poet Laureate program.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collaboration with 826 Valencia and Youth Speaks. We're so excited to offer this opportunity again. Our cohort will include 10 to 15 young writers, ages 14 to 19 years old. They will participate in an advanced workshop series every 2 weeks from September 2026 through January 2027. Two of our cohort members will be selected as San Francisco Youth Poet Laureate and Vice Laureate. Participants' poetry will be published in 826 Valencia's SF Youth Poet Laureate Anthology, and we'll have opportunities for them to perform in San Francisco across all of our library locations and other events in spring of 2027. So if you are a young poet or writer or performer, ages 14 to 19, you're invited to apply. And that information will be on sfpl.org/teens.
Excellent. Now, Laura, I can tell that you've got something that's really good. So hit us.
I do. I want to talk about some of our all ages and intergenerational programming. These are programs that are open to anyone of any age.
Mm-hmm.
They're designed to encourage cross-generational learning and connection
mm-hmm.
and community building. They're great opportunities for families and community members to share experiences and learn from each other. We have so many all-ages science and nature programs that we've put together, but one I'm really most excited about are the programs we're working on with the Golden Gate Bird Alliance. So these are programs where you can improve your birding skills or learn about bird watching and get started with bird watching with family-friendly expert help from the Golden Gate Bird Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple different locations that are doing that. The one I think is going to be the most fun is the Bookmobile. We'll be at Sunset Dunes Park on July 21st with Golden Gate Bird Alliance. And so a great opportunity to check out the Bookmobile, maybe get your Bookmobile sticker and learn about birds, and especially seabirds that are near the ocean.
Okay. And how about you, Jen? You got anything for our audience?
Of course I do. We have lots of things, but I wanted to mention that libraries and parks are a perfect partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Spaces are free. All are welcome. But for this summer, the Golden Gates Parks Conservancy will be offering shuttle trips from branches to local Bay Area nature spots.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll be led by a ranger who will be giving a bit of info. And then participants are invited to explore on their own or go on a mini tour with the ranger. So that will be reservation required.
Mm-hmm.
Check in with your local library to make sure that they're hosting. Not every library is lucky enough to host a program this year. So limited locations. I also want to shout out SF Children in Nature.
Mm-hmm.
They are, how do I say this? We've collaborated with SF Children in Nature to create an SF adventure nature map. And it was specifically designed for youth and families to pick up at their local libraries and other childcare centers to explore free nature spots in the city. And some of our locations, whether it be a nature spot or a library branch,
mm-hmm.
are sticker stops. So you could pick up a sticker. Once you collect 4 stickers, then you earn a free ride on the Leroy Carousel at Yerba Buena Gardens.
Wow, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, we are 100% out of time, but I am so thrilled about all of these programs that you guys have told me about. And hopefully we'll have some public service announcements that you guys can provide us so that we can run those throughout the year so that throughout the summer so that people can stay on top of everything. So I want to thank all three of you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, people of Earth, it's time for me to turn the mic over to the next DJ who'll be pleasuring your ear hole. There's so much to do and so much fun to be had and so many books to read and so many activities to do at the library. Until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Yeah.